Christian Parenting.
Welcome to Pardon the Mess. I'm your host, Courtney DeFeo, and on this podcast, we talk about raising kids as Christian parents. It's so very important for me to honor God with my family and the two kids that He's given me, but honestly, it's not always neat or easy or tidy, but it's always worth it. So join us every week to laugh and learn together on this beautiful and messy journey of parenting. Guys are going to love this series. We're calling it a series, but it's basically just three episodes in a row that have empty nesters. We're calling it Empty Nester Wisdom. And our first guest that's going to offer us wisdom from her empty nest years is Kristen Hatton. She is here in Dallas. She's authored four books, and her latest one is called Parenting Ahead, Preparing Now for the Teen Years. She is amazing. She gives so many practical pieces of advice and just encouragement. And I think you'll enjoy seeing what she is experiencing and noticing from this place of an empty nest and looking back. And I just treasure that advice from anyone older than me. So here we go. Okay. Hi, Kristen. How are you?
I am well. It's good to be with you, Courtney.
I know. And we're literally across the city from each other, but we're on this app thing.
Exactly. But it's nice that we know each other in person now.
I know. So let's tell people how we know each other. Actually, first, why don't you tell people who you are? I've given a little intro, but tell them where you are personally, professionally, a little bit about your family.
Sure. So I am recently back in Dallas. I'm from Texas, but lived in Oklahoma the past 14 years. My husband is a family pastor here. We are new empty nesters. I've got three children. My daughter is married. Today's actually her second anniversary today that we're recording this. And then my two boys are in college, but they're home for the summer. And I'm a counselor. And that's kind of a new midlife career change. I'm an author. I have four books, but went back and got my master's in counseling fairly recently and love working with teenage girls. And
yeah, I think that's encouraging to other moms to be like, you know what? You can have a pivot and you can have another career. So when did you go back to school and how long have you been practicing?
I went back to school in 2019, graduated 2021. I kind of fast-tracked it because COVID hit, so I was able to get more classes quicker. So I've been practicing since then. I'm still an LPC associate. So I am still accruing hours to be fully licensed.
That's amazing. I love that you're with teen girls. You know how much I love my girls and it's so needed right now. Tell me the name of the dog that's saying hello to us right now.
I know. I'm so sorry.
You're good.
Sleeping peacefully. That's Maverick. He loves to talk to every, you know, dog and stroller that goes by our front window.
I love it. So Winter Pitts and I, before she passed away, we had a podcast together for girls and literally same thing. Every time we got on, the dog would start barking and she's like, this dog doesn't make a sound until she called it the devil dog. She's like, devil dog.
So I mean, for like, real. And I'm way back in the far side of the house with the doors closed and that's how loud he is.
You're great. You're great. Hey, Maverick, glad to have you join us today. Okay. So I got to think about the first time we met. We were definitely friends online before we were friends in person. And do you remember? I literally have no memory of the first time we met.
We just met in person a couple months ago in April, yeah. Right when my book came out.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I was on your earlier podcast. I don't know how many years that was. We've been online friends for quite a few years.
Oh my gosh. And then we both got to go to a thing called the Open Door Sisterhood by our buddy, Krista Gilbert. And I feel like that bonds you when you've both been through a retreat or an experience and you're like, oh, you've done it too. We're like soul sisters in some fun kind of way, right?
Absolutely. Yes. That's why it was just so fun to finally know you in real life.
I love it. I love it. All right. Well, we're going to jump in. I wish we had 2 hours, but I know you have lots to share. But in your new book, Parenting Ahead, Preparing Now for the Teen Years, I loved it. I was sitting down reading last night just some of the sections. And I want to start with this introduction. It's so perfect. But it says, in 2017, I wrote a blog post entitled 8 Things Parents Can Do Now to Shape the Teen Years Ahead. The post had so much interest that the following week, I expanded the post into a mini blog series before the teen years. The popularity of the series confirmed my observation from speaking publicly and personally with parents This is the ball game. Parents of younger children are fearful of the teen years ahead and are hungry for tips and guidance. And I'm like, that's it. That's exactly what I'm experiencing too. And I know that was me not many years ago, that I was scared, but I was also wanting advice. It's almost like you have a great recipe and it's like, why would you not pass that meatloaf to another friend if it's working? So tell us more about, I guess, the start of this book and your experience with younger moms that are feeling overwhelmed. And, you know, that's just a couple areas to start, but tell us again on your heart why you wanted to do this book.
Yeah. So I was noticing how many moms are just fearful. And of course, I've experienced it myself. I mean, in the culture that we live in today, there's a lot to fear, right? I mean, we worry about our kids' choices and the influence of their environment and who their friends will be. Will they be left out? Of course, we've got social media. And I mean, there's just a lot. Will they hold firm to their faith? So I was seeing this all around me. And yet early on, and I mentioned this in the book too, when my children were still toddlers, I was influenced by Paul Tripp's book, Age of Opportunity, which is written to parents of teenagers. And he just presents it, parenting as an opportunity. And that really was just a mind shift for me way back in the beginning of parenting that, okay, it's an opportunity to move towards them. Like even their sin and struggles is an opportunity. And so trying to keep that at the forefront, because alongside seeing parents who were fearful, I was already thick in the teenage years. And I was seeing so many parents also just throw their hands up and just abdicate any responsibility because it's like, teens will be teens. What can I do? They're not listening to me anyway. So why even try? Let's just let them do whatever they want. And that's not the answer.
So. And I bet as a pastor's wife, you probably saw it all. You know, you're like seeing firsthand some of these approaches.
Yep. And I mean, we were in big public schools and in ministry and, you know, and that, a lot of this is what led to me to want to get a counseling degree because I was seeing parents and families struggling. And so often those of us in the church, we think that we're the only ones when things are kind of falling apart and we want to hide and because it looks like everybody else has it all together or they're not struggling with the same things that we are. And yet I was seeing like, well, no, we're all struggling. Life is hard. Parenting is hard. And so I just wanted to bring that more out into the forefront and also just help encourage and equip parents, help them see they're not alone.
I read I think it was like a review on a podcast. I don't know how I got into this. You know how you're like clicking, you're like, what? 2 hours later, you're like, how did I get to this part of the internet? But I was reading a review on a podcast and it said, I don't listen to parenting podcasts because it is impossible. Like the standard is impossible and I end up feeling terrible about myself. And that like hit me in the gut because I'm like, that's the furthest from what I want people to experience on this. Like, and that is so true. I think that I got overwhelmed when my kids are little. It's like the to-do list is too big. Like it is impossible to achieve all the things. So I love on even at the beginning, you say that as parents, we are their primary shaping influence and we are not God. He is the ultimate shaper of their lives, which is so refreshing and such freedom, but we also can't just sit there, like you said. So what is that balance for you? Looking back, how did you bump up against all the things that need to be done and all the ways that we could and have the opportunity to influence them, but still not just sit on the couch and pray that they turn out to be decent humans? I mean, it's tough, right?
Yes, it is. And I will say that God has been growing me in that area so much through the parenting teen years because I was much more of a controlling parent, fearful, trying to manage it all when my first was a new teenager. And through the years, God has really shown me I'm not in control. I mean, yes, I can speak into them and I should, and we should have consequences and boundaries. But ultimately, God is over our children. And so learning to rest in that, and that's really, really hard, but he's writing their story. And sometimes that includes, a lot of times, that includes some really hard circumstances. And so I feel like God has us, the parents, just as much in mind as he does our kids and their individual struggles, because he's growing us to be more dependent on him so that we do trust him and relinquish any semblance of thinking that we have control.
Yeah. Where did you even start? And I know maybe this is a question for you and your husband, but as you looked at the landscape of parenting your kids And I love that in the idol section, you talk about some ways we could go. We could make control the priority. We could make success. Like, are they the best on the team? Others' opinions. There's so many idols that we could put above it. But how did you as a family order, ultimately, what was the most important thing for you as Christian parents?
Yeah. And I talk about that in the book too, just our own values. What is it I want most for my children? And let that guide me. And so for me, above everything, I want my children to know Jesus and know that they are loved by him. And so how then are we going to work towards that? And so that meant a different priorities. And so sometimes that meant saying no to their social life because I wanted to protect our family time, sibling time, time for church. And that's swimming upstream against culture. And sometimes that means our kids are mad at us because we put boundaries down and say that, I'm sorry, we're going to all stay home tonight. Yeah. But if we're always saying yes to everything, I mean, there's so many good things even to say yes to. And so it's hard to say no. And yet, what is it? What are our values? And so another value besides just Christ was our family. I mean, my children have each other, their siblings forever. And my daughter, I mean, she's 3 years removed from college now. So she sees that, you know, you hang on to a couple high school friends, a couple college friends, you get new friends as you grow. And so she sees really that, like, yep, my brothers are with me for the long haul, but friends kind of come and go.
Yes, that's so good. And so hard to see it in the midst of it. You think, you know, I remember in high school thinking, my life is over because of this breakup, or my life is over because of this friend. And it's hard for our girls and boys to see that that is not the end ball game. You know, I remember at my first baby shower, my boss at Chick-fil-A said, keep a hold of what matters in 10 years, not what matters in the next 10 minutes. And that is hard to do when you're in it, but it's so true. It's like, what at the end of the day, are they going to look back and be like, geez, I'm so glad I played t-ball every 3 days, you know? And that's not, sports aren't bad, right?
It's like, right, right. I mean, we're a huge sports family.
Yeah,
but,
But when it takes over, it's like.
When it's controlling everything.
Yeah. How did you do that? What were some of your kids into that? Did anything get out of control that you kind of had to reel back and go, whoa, that got out of, that took priority over the other thing? And I have tons of examples of where I've bombed this, but can you think of any where you, that kind of balance got out of whack?
Well, it was challenging because my boys played varsity football all the way through, but they were multi-sports boys, you know, until they really honed in on football. And one of them was a wrestler also in high school, but, thankfully, football is not one that is as much of a year-round sport as some of the others. But I mean, mine played baseball and did some of those things. And as a ministry family, that was especially challenging because my husband was preaching every Sunday. And so we couldn't just go on weekend tournaments all the time. And so in one sense, that probably helped us. But I mean, it was certainly hard because there was times that we made the conscious decision that we are not going to be on this travel team. And it's not because your dad is a pastor. It's because our value is the church is important. And this is where we want to be. And it doesn't mean you can't still play. And sometimes we would talk to coaches and say, you know what, he can play in the Sunday afternoon game, but he's not going to be there in the morning. Right. And so that was hard. And it was, you know, not a popular thing. And yet my boys, they didn't suffer. I mean, they were still on the varsity team. And I think sometimes we buy into this lie that if we don't get on this rat race, you know, treadmill, that they're never going to make it. And yet mine did.
Yeah. And I think what you said about the family, like, I've had friends that kids have gone off the, you know, how do you say it? Not off the radar, but the wheels have fallen off for years. And the parents said the thing that they kept most important was the communication. And I think if you don't have time together, no matter what decisions they're making, you have to have that relationship. Well, they will come back no matter what they're choosing to do, that they will come back and feel safe with you. And I love that you brought that up. I'm going to confess one that I was obsessed with when I were little. Okay. So Southern, smocked dresses. I'm so serious. When mine were little, I was like, if they don't have the matching outfits for every season. Right. I mean, I was like going to show after show being like, okay, this July 4th one is going to hit and they're going to match. And it was fun. I was bored to a sense. But I looked back and someone asked me, look at your time and your checkbook. and you can see where your priorities are. And I was like, my priority is that they look cute. And that is so terrible and a funny example, but it really did get my attention to go, is this all I want to do? Is that they get fed, they're alive. And it's not to say you can't have fun, but I remember being so embarrassed, be like, wow, they look real good. But you know, some of those things get out of whack, right?
They do. And I was right there with you. In fact, I even signed up to be a rep for one of those smocked clothing companies because I was like, I got to have those. So I got to figure out a way to get the discount.
Yes. I probably went to one of your shows. No, I'm kidding. That was Atlanta Days. But it's easy for little seamless, like quick or easy things that can truly take hold. And I do think as I'm talking this through in my head, I'm like, I do think it's also overwhelming. Like you think about the gospel and how to talk about it to little ones, it can feel super overwhelming. So talk to us about that. Like how I love so many practical things you have in there about here's the world's view, now here's God's view. How did you start introducing, and I know your husband's a pastor, but we can all do this. How did you introduce the gospel in age-appropriate nugget ways when they were little so that they weren't just experiencing it as teenagers?
Yes. And that is a huge part of the book is building a foundation, starting as early as possible, because it is easier, of course, when they're teenagers, if you've already been building that foundation. Mm-hmm. But we thought of it in categories, like we wanted to create categories for them to better comprehend. And so we talked about sin as idolatry. And I know people would be like, how do you tell a two-year-old about idolatry? But we really believe that teaching precedes understanding. And so we get to shape their hearts. And so we get to create these categories to help them see that sin is more than just external behavior. It's more than hitting your brother. It's what's going on in your heart. What's driving our behavior? What's our motivations and the secret parts? And so we would talk about what's ruling your heart. And just breaking it down and telling them really when they're little. But in time, just as Deuteronomy 6 talks about, our children come to ask more and they start to see and they start to understand. And so by the time my kids were older and especially teenagers, they knew that their sin, it was much bigger than just, you know, what we see on the outside, because they could identify what was ruling their heart. And so we were able to have deeper level heart conversations, and they were able to see to a greater degree their need for Jesus, because I grew up really, you know, not knowing my sin. I know generally that like I am a sinner, but I was pretty good. I mean, I followed the rules and I didn't do anything real bad. And so I didn't really understand my need for Jesus until I began to understand, taking, for instance, the parable of the two sons. I mean, we've got the older brother and the younger brother. Well, the older brother is just as far from the father as the younger brother, but his sin is pride and self-righteousness. And so that was kind of more how I would categorize myself as older brother. And so those are two other categories we would use with our kids, is older brother sin, younger brother sin. In the book, I really, you know, break it down, because that might sound lofty to start, and yet really it helps to build those foundations so that they really are grasping it by the time they're older, and it just gives so much more depth and helps them see their need for Jesus. I mean, another thing I was seeing years ago is the statistics about all these kids that grow up in the church and yet they leave the church in college and beyond. And so if we're not dealing with the internal sin where they really see they need Jesus, I feel like the messages sometimes they could hear anywhere. They're not really being confronted with, oh my gosh, I need a savior, and being in awe of what he has done for them.
Well, I love that you say it's a heart matter, because I think that we can produce, and I talk about this in my first book, that we can produce little robots that are like the Von Trapp family. They line up in order, you know, in Sound of Music. We whistle, we say the right thing. They know the knowledge of everything in their head. They can recite it, but they've missed the whole experience with God, or they've missed moments where it's a heart issue. So I love that you touch on that. And I think as parents of young kids, that can feel overwhelming. Like, I don't even know what to say. I don't even know what to do, which is why I love podcasts and books. It's like we can help encourage each other ahead of the game and say, try this, say this. There's no formula, right? But we can encourage each other on how to do that.
No formula. And I will say another thing is, living redemptively is something I talk a lot about. Parents have to go first. And one of the biggest things that we can say is, I'm sorry, please forgive me. And that's how our children learn, like, the how the gospel plays out in everyday life. Like, we are sinners. And so if you have four, five, six sinners living together in a household, we are going to sin against each other. And so what do we do with that? And so often in counseling, what I see is that families don't ever deal honestly with it. They sweep it under the rug. Parents self-justify, and yet teenagers see it. And so then they're really resentful towards their parents. And so I say, parents, when you know that you have maybe, you know, been impatient, or you've yelled at your child, or whatever it is, you know, go to them and say, I am sorry, please forgive me. And that's how our children learn too, that it's safe to one, go to you and ask for forgiveness, but also they can go to God, because we model who God is to them. And so if they see that we are saying, yes, in your brokenness and sin, you're free to admit it and come boldly.
Yeah, I love that.
Imagine a home where reading, creating, and learning happen naturally. The all-new resource from Classical Conversations, Scribblers at Home, Recipes from Lifelong Learners, is designed to help parents of children ages 4 to 8 cultivate these habits into simple daily rhythms inside the home. Through step-by-step activities, Scribblers at Home will be your guide to teach your child the basic skills of learning while having fun along the way. To learn more, go to scribblersathome.com/mess.
Have you guys heard of the online learning program called IXL? My kids were actually required to do IXL as a part of their school, and they would roll their eyes when it was time. But I think they would tell you years later, and I would tell you, that it really worked and it helped them so much. They received the help they needed in subjects where they were struggling. And I know other parents at our school that used it for their kids that are ahead and they weren't getting challenged enough in the classroom. IXL Learning is an online learning program that enriches your homeschool curriculum and your child's classroom learning. It offers practice in math, English, language arts, science, and social studies while adapting it to each child. It meets them where they are. Plus, IXL encourages students to be curious and empowers them to choose how to learn. And the best part is, IXL is easy for parents. Don't we need that? One site gets you all you need, and IXL customizes learning for each child in your family and their specific needs. IXL is organized by grade, subject, topic, and subtopic, and it makes it simple to find activities for the exact skills that you are covering. It also offers instant feedback and explanations of the topics as the kids use the program, which is super helpful. So you can feel confident as a parent that your kids will gain an understanding of the skills they are learning. Make an impact today on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And pardon the mess, listeners can get an exclusive 20% off an IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price. You probably know Avocado Green Mattress for their certified organic mattresses. I've been talking about that lately, but did you know they also make unbelievably breathable natural bedding? From soft organic cotton sheets to light as air silk and lofty down duvets, their bedding is designed to naturally regulate your temperature and keep you cool, comfy, and sleeping soundly all night long. So listen up, hot sleepers, this one's for you. This bedding is perfect for hot sleepers in warmer months. Hello, Texas summer. Avocado sheets and duvet inserts are naturally breathable, and they help regulate your temperature so you can sleep cool, dry, and comfortable all night long. And just like those mattresses, avocado bedding is crafted from renewable, biodegradable materials with the highest social and environmental standards. So it's better for you and better for the planet. And beyond that sustainability, this bedding is designed to deliver luxurious comfort that will have you looking forward to crawling into your bed every night. Head on over to avocadomattress.com to save 10% on all bedding and 50% on clearance bedding. Avocado, dream of better. I would love to encourage parents that maybe aren't Christians yet or have just stumbled into this. It sounds like a good idea. Maybe they're exploring their faith for the first time, or maybe they didn't grow up in a home that spoke about Jesus at all. And it can feel like, I literally have no idea how to present the gospel to them. So how would you encourage a parent that's right there? I always say you have to be one hour behind your kids. It's like you may be learning at the same time as your kids. So that can feel super overwhelming to teach something you don't necessarily have in your own heart yet or know what to say. How would you encourage that journey?
Yeah. I mean, that storybook Bible is so good. So that's something I would encourage, to do that together, to come alongside together. And some of the children's books are really great because it breaks it down in just easier to understand language. And yeah. I think when our kids come to us with questions, and if we're new to faith or we don't know, it's okay to say that. Say, you know what? Mommy doesn't know. Let's explore this together. Or I'm going to ask someone and figure this out. And because God made us the best parents for our child. And I know we want to kind of outsource everything. Yeah. And yet for us to come alongside, I mean, we are their number one influence, and that includes their number one spiritual influence. Mm. But that doesn't mean that we have to be, seminary educated to be able to do that.
Well, that's good, because I dropped out of seminary after one class.
Yes. So just not to be afraid or feel insecure because of what we don't know, but just to come alongside humbly and learn alongside with them.
Yeah, I love that. All right. What would you say are the benefits of parenting young ones ahead, like the title of your book? So you obviously did that. You were super intentional and proactive. So to the parent that's like, I am literally surviving. I'm getting them in bed. We are feeding them and they are keeping them alive, which is all great goals. But what would be the benefit as someone that now can look back from the empty nest years and see kind of the fruit and see the benefit of making this a priority to kind of parent ahead and get them ready for the teen years?
Yeah. Most of all, I really want to cast this vision to help parents see that what you do now in the early years will impact what happens in the later years. And so if we, for instance, don't have any boundaries, we don't say no. And maybe that's very benign. It's like saying, just giving in to, they want another snack because we don't want to deal with it because we're in a conversation with a friend, right? Mm-hmm. That feels benign. But if our children learn early on that, like, oh, I know how to beat mom down, like she's going to give in eventually because she's going to get tired of me asking. Well, what does that look like when all of a sudden they're 17 and they want to do something that, you know, is illegal or ethically, you know, morally wrong? But they've already learned and they've been beaten down. So I really am trying to cast a vision for parents to see, like, this is what this might look like now, which is not maybe that big of a deal, but this is how it's going to play out later. And so this is why it matters what you're doing or not doing now. And then I also talk a lot to help cast that vision for parents to see how we are parenting. So our parenting styles, over parenting, which is helicopter parenting, or under parenting, which is more of a permissive parenting, what's driving that and how that plays out. And we know from research out there now from young adults that anxiety, depression, suicidal ideation, all these things that our young adults are struggling with connects back to parenting styles. And it really from both types, which I thought was fascinating.
That is
because those two types of parenting is so different, and yet it is impacting them. And so I felt like in this book, helping again to see the longer term results of this is where we're headed when we're doing X, Y, and Z, to really help parents see that right now it may feel exhausting and it's the mundane, and yet what I am doing in the day to day matters, not just now, but 10 years from now, 15 years
that.
From now.
Gosh, it's so good. And I was thinking even from safety, it's like if they can hear your voice, it's like, no, don't cross the road. And they stop. That's not a good thing to start when they're 13. It's like you want them when they're 2 and 3 to listen to your voice and not run into the road, things like that.
So totally. Yes.
Okay. I'm going to get super practical. So I'm going to share one and give you time to think about it. But I was thinking, man, it may be helpful to hear people say, like, practically, this is how we live this out. For example, dinner time was probably something important to you as you thought about we need a connection. Like you said, they can't be doing sports, you know, 7 days a week because you want that connection as a family. So let's think through what are some practical ways
that families can start modeling their virtues and values and what they believe early on so that it is not brand new. That's like, okay, now you're 14, let's sit down and have dinner. They're like, what? We've never done this before. But one that I think for us, we said early on, our church service, when they dedicated our children, they had a baby dedication. They had us write down 5 values of what we felt like at the end of the ball game were going to be super important to us. So one of those on our list was generosity and service. And I think they go hand in hand, but it was really important. I was raised that way. I wanted my kids to live generous lives. And so practically we have made moments for them to learn how to serve. So it wasn't like we talk about this, but I wanted their feet and their hearts and their minds in the ball game. So next week we're headed towards Lighthouse to serve kids with cancer. And I tried little bitty ways to teach them how to do that over Christmas, but it's something that's like, this is ingrained. It was ingrained in me. I watched my mom live it out. And I thought, if this is a priority, then we need to actually do it. Not just talk about it, but I just, you know, talk about the word, but live it out and do it. And so how about you? Is one or two examples you can think of practically that you said, this was a value and this was something important to our family specifically. And here's how we made it practical in a rhythm and a part of your daily life.
Yeah. And I love that y'all had to write those down at your baby dedication. That's great. But hospitality is what pops into my mind because we've always had people in and out of our house. And way back when my kids were little, my husband was a college minister. So we had college students in and out of our house. And that they're a little bit easier audience because you maybe don't care as much if your house is perfect. But I mean, that carried over into all of our life is that we were constantly having extra people at our dinner table, you know, whether it was a holiday and someone didn't have a place to go or just all the time, we were having people in and out of our home to share meals together. And I had to learn real quick, like, this is impossible to have my house perfectly put together and to have a perfect meal and to have the perfect tablescape. And so because that's not what was important. The important thing was connecting with other people. And I had our children participate in that. And so I don't think we ever separated out where the kids weren't part of that. And so sometimes they're sitting at tables, being a part of a conversation with adults. They're learning to engage with adults, learning how to have those conversations, but just seeing the value of welcoming people in and not letting our own, you know, maybe idols of, I need to have the perfect house or I need to have all this, you know, set a certain way, or even time. Sometimes, and even still, it's like I finish with my clients at 5 o'clock and then we're having people over. And so it's just a thrown together thing. But if our value is really like, let's just be hospitable and do life together, then that's, and I see my kids doing that now, especially my daughter who now has her own, you know, little apartment and she's constantly having people over. And I just feel like they're much more forward-faced and thinking about inviting people in, whatever capacity that looks like.
I love that. And I can see you being very good at that and hosting all kinds of people. So I'm coming over. Get ready.
Great. I love it. Can't wait.
I love it. Okay. I've got a couple more questions. I'm mentoring a young mom here in the Colleyville area, and she asked me a question that really stumped me. So now I'm going to throw it at you. Get ready. So I thought we could talk it through.
Thanks for the warning.
You're like, thanks for these easy questions. But she said, how do I raise my kids to know that the way that we are doing it is not more superior or self-righteous? Because it can sound like that to someone that's not raising their kids in a Christian home. It can sound like, well, la-ti-da, they don't watch this movie or they do this. So how can you start saying to your young kids, like, this is our family values. This is what we believe Jesus is asking us to do in a way that doesn't sound like they're better than somebody else. And I know that's super tricky, but do you have any thoughts on that so I can email her back with whatever you say?
Well, actually, what you just said is great because it doesn't all, I mean, there's a lot of things in the Bible that are not black and white. Like, we have some room to interpret that, what that looks like. And different families are going to make different choices about, you know, what your time is going to look like when you give a kid a cell phone, or, I mean, all these different things that we have some gray area on. And so I was constantly telling our children things like that. Like, this is what our family does. And because they would ask, they'd be like, well, so-and-so is a Christian and their family doesn't do this. And I'm like, that's okay. That's, you know, this is what we feel convicted of, or this is what we want it to look like. And it doesn't always look the same with everybody. And that's okay.
Yeah. I love that. So good. Love it. Love it. Okay. Tell me, before I have people find you somewhere, tell me what at the end of the day, if somebody picked up this book, and I know it's not a business thing for you, it's a heart ministry thing that you were pressed and God taught you something and you wanted to share that. So as you think about people picking up your book or connecting with you online, what is your hope that they walk away feeling or knowing?
Really encouraged and understanding, one, that there's no perfect parent. Like, we are going to mess up. And that's why that redemptive living is so important, because I feel like even our sin can be a positive shaping influence in our children's lives. And I see so often, doing family ministry right now, just moms that are paralyzed that they're going to scar their children, or that they have to be perfect, they have to get it right. And I want to free you from that. There is no formula, and we are going to fail, but it's what do we do with that? And so if we are able to go to our children and again say, please forgive me, I'm sorry, that is a positive shaping influence. Our children are going to remember that, that we weren't perfect, and yet how did we deal with it? Whereas I will add this too, there was a time that my daughter viewed me as perfect because I wasn't as vulnerable or as transparent as God has helped me to be later in the years. But and a lot of her own struggles were connected to feeling like I wasn't relatable because she never saw me struggle. She thought I had it all together because I was keeping it more hidden. And so I think it's important that we let our kids see our wrestling and our imperfections so that they know that we are relatable and that we're safe to come to.
Yeah. Oh gosh, I love that. Christian, you offer such a relatable approach, I think, in the way that you talk about your kids and your family. And I can imagine that was difficult, just layered with being married to a pastor, that there's probably some level of protection there that you were like, not just going to go online and share all the dirt of the family, you know, but I love that you had a relationship that she could communicate that to you and you weren't too prideful to pivot. And I think that is major. And I love that you're a counselor too. So I just, you've got it all going on, and I'm super thankful that you continue to write and that you're not just on the beach, just enjoying the empty nest years for, just having fun.
Sounds pretty good about now.
Yes, that's right. Well, tell people where they can find you and connect with more.
Yes. Redemptive Parenting is where you can find me on Instagram. And then my website is kristenhatton.com. I've got my books are all published by New Growth Press, and they're available on Amazon.
I love it. Thank you so much for your time. And I look forward to seeing you at lunch or coffee sometime.
Absolutely. Thank you, Courtney. I appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Pardon the Mess. As always, we've got more encouragement and resources over at christianparenting.org. And you can also stay connected with us on social media over at Pardon the Mess or christianparenting_org. Remember, you're never alone in this beautiful mess of parenting.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.